Kate, give us a little background on yourself before we start talking about your grandmother.
Well, that always takes me by surprise. I'm so used to talking about my mother and grandmother that, this is an interesting question. Well, I live in Vermont. I was born and raised here in Vermont. I am the youngest of nine kids, very much a country person, though I did live in New York City for many, many years. I write. That's the way I make my living of sorts. It's always interesting doing that. And I do a lot of traveling. I've spent years on the road, most recently in Ireland, where my husband and I divide our time between Vermont and Ireland.
This isn't your first book about your grandmother, is it?
Well, I did another book, which is quite different. It's called Dorothy Day and the Catholic Worker, The Miracle of Our Continuance. And it was done in collaboration with a photographer, Vivian Cherry. That came out in 2016. And that was more of a, Vivian Cherry is 96 years old, still with us, a street photographer from New York City. And in the 1950s, she spent several weeks at the Catholic Worker taking pictures and both of the worker and of my grandmother. And we thought it would just be wonderful to republish those photos. So that came out in 2016.
Maybe you can explain to our listeners, what is the Catholic Worker?
That's always a wonderful question. I think even Catholic workers ask that. The Catholic Worker is a movement. It began in 1933, founded by my grandmother, Dorothy Day, and Peter Morin, co-founder, a French peasant who had come to my grandmother with a vision of how he would say how to make the world easier, a place where it's easier to be good. And this was during the Great Depression, New York City. Millions of people around the country, of course, were out of work and living quite rough lives. In New York City itself, there was just probably, they have no idea, but there were encampments of homeless. And my grandmother had gone through a very interesting time previous to that. She was very much involved with the radical groups of the 20s. And then in 1927, she converted to Catholicism, which was quite an extraordinary move for that time. But she never dropped her radical roots and was very, very much interested in social justice. And when she met Peter Morin, he said, and she didn't know this when she converted to Catholicism, he said, the church has a program for social justice. It has teachings on social issues. And this was explosive to my grandmother. And she said, okay, let's do something about this. And because she was a journalist, the natural thing for her to do was to start a newspaper. So in May 1st, 1933, Union Square, which was the site of a lot of, you know, labor unrest, labor movement protests, she started handing out the paper, The Catholic Worker. It did not start as a movement. It started as a paper. And what it eventually turned into, quite rapidly turned into, was houses of hospitality, soup line, clothing rooms, you know, places to help people do what she considered the essential message of the gospel, which was the works of mercy. Feed the hungry, clothe the naked, shelter the homeless, etc. And before she knew it, she was writing about this. She always said, I never intended to start a soup line. But of course, people with need came to her saying, well, you're writing about these houses of hospitality. Where is one? We need help. And she just said, okay, that's the next step. And pretty soon, within 3 years, the Catholic Worker movement had exploded. You know, houses of hospitality were opening up all over the country and in the major cities. And the paper, which started as a very small paper of 2,500 copies, had blossomed into 160,000 copies. And the Catholic Worker movement still exists today, you know, 37 years after her death, 38 years after her death, and keeps growing. There are houses of hospitality and farms around the country and overseas.
That's quite a legacy. How did you research the story? Because as I read it, I thought, what remarkable detail in here. And if you ask me what I did myself last week, I have trouble. So I'm wondering, what kind of things did you delve into? How did you find out so much colorful detail about her life?
Well, I was very lucky because my family is very well documented by themselves and by others. There's a lot of diary writers in my family, a lot of letter writers. And of course, my grandmother was a prolific writer herself. She wrote 7 books and numerous columns. So there was just an incredible source of material out there, and archives. There's some fabulous archives, many photographs. Really, there was, and also above all, I had the stories of my grandmother and my mother. You know, I spent many, many years talking to my mother and listening to my mother tell her stories. And they both were just loved to tell stories. My grandmother, and most people don't know this, was a wonderful storyteller. Just that was the way she spoke when she spoke publicly. She just told stories and absolutely mesmerizing. So I really was quite lucky to have those wonderful sources. And also I did a lot of, you know, additional research and just trying to find out what was happening, you know, at the time, during the lives of my grandmother and my mother, you know, what was happening around that. And that was a lot of fun. I actually really enjoyed the research part.
And as you worked on this, I've got to think it also changed your relationship, your connection, whether the people were alive or not, while you're working on this.
Oh, absolutely. My mother and my grandmother lived very difficult lives, very hard lives, each in her own way. And they also had a difficult relationship. They were two very different people who didn't always understand each other. It happens a lot between mothers and daughters. Mm-hmm. But there was, you know, a lot of decisions that they both made that I could not understand. And in the process of reading their writings, reading my mother's diaries, reading my grandmother's diaries, reading the letters between them, I found myself, and this is the most remarkable change, I think, that happened in writing this book. It wasn't, you know, people ask me, did you find out any information that really surprised you that you didn't know? And I really didn't. They were both very honest storytellers. I mean, there are a few things that they stayed away from discussing. But generally, you know, there just wasn't any great surprises. But what did surprise me is that I actually fell in love with the two of them in this process. Mm. You know, I mean, of course, I love them deeply anyway, but I just to understand who they were. And that was the biggest process that I went through in writing this book is not only understanding why they did the things they did, but also understanding what that means to me and how I live my life, how I see them individually, how they still speak to me now, even so long after their deaths.
It interests me that there's talk of sainthood, and yet Dorothy Day broke a lot of rules in her, especially in her youth. There's an abortion, there's a child out of wedlock, your mother, and she led somewhat of a bohemian lifestyle. So I'm wondering if you can explain to us how this wonderful dynamic of sinner and saint in your grandmother.
Well, it's not unusual. I think if you read a lot of the stories of the saints, you'll find similar stories. So that is not an issue at all, certainly in terms of the church and its process in determining whether she is a saint. I mean, yes, she had quite a bohemian life before she converted to Catholicism, but the problem isn't, I mean, the church doesn't view that as an issue at all. What the issue is what happened to her after her conversion. Did she live a life of heroic virtue? You know, can there be miracles ascribed to her? Is she important to us? In quite an interesting way. I mean, the whole process of determining whether she is a saint is a little mind-bending for me. You know, not only for who she was, you know, I think to those of us who knew her, the question isn't, you know, should she be a saint because of her earlier life? That really doesn't come across. It's the life that she lived as a practicing Catholic, which was quite radical because she did not drop her radical roots. She continued to get arrested for causes that she believed in. And she continued to push the church, question the church, you know, are you following your own teachings? And that's quite uncomfortable for many, many people. So, and also I think the most interesting thing is, of course, she famously said herself, don't call me a saint. I don't want to be dismissed so easily, which I can totally hear her saying. She had a sharp tongue. She could She has certain impatience with people putting her on a pedestal. You know, I know what she was saying. She was saying, because she was not dismissing saints. She loved saints, and she lived her life being inspired by them and having a very close relationship with some of the saints. So this is not a statement from her about sainthood. What it was an impatience with people saying, oh, she can do that work. She's a saint. She's better than us. And we just go on living our little lives. And she was saying, no, do not do that. You know, you cannot put me aside. You have to do the work yourself.
Talk to us about her ongoing love for Forrester.
That was one thing that I just absolutely love. Well, there's many things I love about this story. I'm so appreciative that I've been able to tell it. But the continuing relationship between my grandfather, Foster, is the correct way of pronouncing his name. Don't ask me why, but
Foster. All right.
Yeah, you don't pronounce that R. It really surprised, I think, a lot of people, not me and not my mother, because, you know, we knew how close they remained. But, my grandmother stopped talking about him, stopped writing about him in her books. And so people just assumed that he dropped off the radar. But, of course, they were raising a child together. Hmm. You know, my mother spent a lot of time with him and his family, the Batchram family. And my grandmother made sure of that and would bring her to them. So there was still a lot of, going toing and froing during the time when my mother was growing up. And then as the years passed, you know, they kind of, as my mother got married and was raising her own family, my grandmother and Foster kind of drifted apart, though they were still in contact. And then late 1950s, 1959, my grandfather, who did not believe in marriage and never got married, he was with a woman for 30 years, Nanette, and Nanette got cancer. And my grandfather called up my grandmother and said, you know, just devastated, and said, will you please come help? And my grandmother did. She dropped everything, and she helped nurse Nanette in the final months of her life. And during that time, you know, they realized, I think, that they still loved each other deeply. And that was quite a unsettling moment for both of them. But they got through that. And until my grandmother's death in 1980, they remained in very close contact. As the years went on and their illnesses became more prominent, they would they started calling each other every day. And he started coming over to visit her at the Catholic Worker. She was living at Mary House in Manhattan, and he lived about a mile away in the east, on the West Village, and he'd walk over to the East Village to visit her. So they remained very close.
Talk to us about that moment, or maybe moment isn't the right word, process of her conversion to Catholicism, about her faith, which I understand aligned more or less with the birth of your mother.
Yes, you know, that's the question we all gnaw at. We all want to understand about her conversion. I mean, the story of a conversion, I think, is one that appeals to us on many levels. Yes, it did happen. It was triggered by my mother's birth, though I think the process started before that, and I think it continued throughout my grandmother's life. It wasn't just one moment. Her conversion was a living thing. But what happened when my mother was born is that you mentioned my grandmother's abortion. Mm-hmm. And that abortion, of course, was illegal and exceedingly dangerous. And my grandmother thought that she could never have another child because of that abortion. And then she became pregnant and she gave birth to my mother. And she was just so overwhelmed with gratitude and joy that something that she had longed for finally happened. She wasn't going to squander that moment, what she considered a sacred moment. And so she didn't really know what she was doing. She didn't really understand why Catholicism, and people were asking her, why the Catholic Church? It has a history of oppression. She was saying, I don't really know why. And it was just something that was calling to her. I think it was a real, she always had kind of a relationship with the church that was quite mystical. Now, most people don't speak of her as a mystic, but I certainly see her as that, a very practical mystic. And I think that, you know, she was never able to quite explain what happened to her. And to me, I have no problem with that. You know, to me, that indicates even what a greater, you know, more wonderful thing and more meaningful conversion that is. So I really can't tell you much more than that. It's a mystery.
And maybe you can tell us more about Dorothy Day, the writer, because that was quite a passion for her.
Yes, that was her vocation. She was a writer. She believed, you know, her entire life, that was her work. That was how she earned money. That was, her skill. It kind of gets lost in her story because her story is so wonderful in so many ways. She was a prolific writer. You know, at the moment, the Vatican, the church, as they're examining her in the process of this possible canonization, I think they're going through something like 8,000 pages of writings that she did. Mm. So it is, she did do an extraordinary amount of writing, but her writing often isn't given the value that it should. I think she's a fabulous writer. I think she's a beautiful writer. And in ways that she's not, known for, she had a wonderful eye for nature. She had a wonderful eye for characters. She very, delicate sensibility. I really enjoy her writing so much.
Did it inspire you to become a writer?
Oh, absolutely. I can tell you the first moment that I realized that she was a writer, I was 7 years old, and we were at the Catholic Worker Farm in upstate New York, which was where my mother would drive us down, all nine of us kids, to spend summers down there, vacations down there. And I went running into my grandmother's room to say hi to her, and she's sitting at her typewriter. So I ran into her room, and my mother says, "No, be quiet, quiet, Kate. Granny is writing." Mm. And I just stopped, straight in my tracks. And I said, "Writing? She's writing?" You know, at that point, I'd already fallen in love with books. Yeah. Absolutely loved books. I was a reader. And the notion that, someone sat down and wrote these things was just mind-blowing to me. And I knew from that moment I wanted to be a writer. It was very clear in my mind.
You mentioned earlier that part of the process of canonization is whether miracles can be ascribed to a person. Is there anything like that in her life?
There has been, and there is. I can't really tell you the details of these because I'm not, privy to this process. But the miracles are quite specific. It has to be a medical miracle, and it has to be absolutely, well documented medically. And there has to be, the doctors have to claim that there is absolutely no reason that they can tell for this healing. And I know that there are several people who have claimed a healing through her, but I can't really give you any details. I don't know them. And I don't know if they're actual, if people have, if it's just been a remission or what. So I really can't give you much information on that.
Tell us a little bit more about the event at Transformation Spirituality Center.
Well, I've been invited to speak about my grandmother and about the book that I wrote, Dorothy Day, The Role to Be Saved by Beauty, came out last year by Scribner. And basically what I'll be doing is reading and speaking, telling the story. I consider myself a storyteller, and I absolutely adore telling the story of my mother and my grandmother. I have to keep reminding people, Dorothy Day is the big name, but this is a story of, really at its heart, a story between a mother and a daughter, my mother, Tamar, and my grandmother, Dorothy. And also, I'm hoping that there'll be a great discussion afterwards. One of the reasons why I named the book The World to Be Saved by Beauty, which is a quote from Dostoevsky, is that I feel that this is something that provokes us all. I mean, what does that mean? It's a phrase that my grandmother often woke up in the morning saying in the last years of her life. And I just find that such a prayer of hope And so I certainly hope that there'll be a great discussion after the reading.
We're looking forward to it. Thank you so much for speaking with us today, Kate.
Thank you so much.